America is at a crossroads.
And the Chicago
around the lakes.
On inside.
Eyes of 60.
Yes, we can.
Hi there, welcome to Inside America for another week. I'm John Barron. And after 18 months of campaigning, anywhere between $4 and $6 billion spent in total, most of it on very, very negative TV advertising, the US election is over. And we're just about back where we started 18 months ago. Barack Obama is in the White House for another 4 years. The Democrats have the majority in the Senate for at least another 2 years. And the Republicans have a majority in the House of Representatives for at least another 2 years. Virtual status quo and the potential for continued gridlock in Washington unless a grand bargain can be reached and bipartisanship achieved on pressing issues like the so-called fiscal cliff. Those are the automatic sequester cuts to spending on defense and entitlements, coupled with tax increases that kick in at the end of the year, unless a better plan can be agreed upon. And there has to be a better plan, because everybody agrees that those measures would send the US economy straight back into a recession, cutting maybe 5% out of the economy. We'll get to the unglamorous stuff of congressional stasis shortly, but first, the slightly more inspiring bit, at least if you're a Democrat. The presidential election result, close in the national vote this week, but overwhelming, really, in that all-important electoral college. Barack Obama dominant, losing just two states that he won in 2008, claiming in the end 332 electoral college votes to 206 for Republican Mitt Romney. The candidates waited until quite late to make their speeches, well after midnight on Wednesday morning for most Americans. The tone from both candidates, rather conciliatory after what was such a bruising contest.
I have just called President Obama to congratulate him on his victory. His supporters and his campaign also deserve congratulations.
I believe we can seize this future together, because we are not as divided as our politics suggests. We're not as cynical as the pundits believe. We are greater than the sum of our individual ambitions, and we remain more than a collection of red states and blue states. We are, and forever will be, the United States of America. And together, with your help and God's grace, we will continue our journey forward and remind the world just why it is that we live in the greatest nation on earth. Thank you, America. God bless you.
Barack Obama and Governor Mitt Romney after this week's election result was known. Let's get some analysis for you now on what has happened and what might happen next from both sides of the political divide. First, Democrat strategist and talk show host Mark Levin. Mark, welcome back to Inside America.
It's always my pleasure to be with you.
Now, let's talk about the result. First of all, this week, surprisingly strong victory for President Obama in the Electoral College, at least, although Republicans are saying, hey, we got, you know, only a couple of million votes less. This is no mandate. How do you read it?
Well, if you'd only been watching my TV shows and listening to my radio show, you would see that I predicted 332 electoral votes back in September. I'm very, very proud of that prediction. In fact, I submitted it to the Washington Post contest, and I expect to win a T-shirt. So I did predict 332. I must say, people thought I went way on the limb to say that, but I felt he would win by that electoral margin. You're right about the popular vote being close. But still, 2%, that's a big deal in America.
Now, this has got to be an example of some pretty sophisticated electoral engineering from the Democrats. The Obama campaign infrastructure, it gained a quite mythical reputation 4 years ago, but it seems that mythology's been confirmed. We have proof of their eerie powers now, don't we?
Well, look, we all put together a very good ground game. I worked hard in Virginia, another swing state. But you could argue that the election was won back in 2009 when Barack Obama did the auto bailout, saving so many jobs in Ohio, the ultimate swing state. I'm proud to live in the second swingiest state in the United States, or maybe the third after Florida. But Ohio was the state that always is the middle and determines the election. So back when Barack Obama saved the American auto industry there, I would argue he won the election there and then.
The victory in Florida took a while. The count very, very close, but still, I mean, that was a bit of a surprise. Not to you, obviously. You said 332, but most of us were thinking that if Obama was going to get over the line, it was maybe only going to be by 11 or 23 or something. But that was a bit of a surprise. What was the lesson there? Was that about Medicare and Medicaid? Was that about other local factors? How'd you read it?
I would argue the entire election, whether it's Florida or Ohio or Virginia, is about the growing Latino minority in America, growing to really have some major electoral power. Mitt Romney and the Republicans wrote off Latinos early in the election, and I would argue they made the margin. They came through for President Obama, and certainly that's true in Florida. While Cubans are traditionally Republican, the non-Cuban Latino population is very strongly for the Democrats, because Democrats care about immigration issues and other things, whereas Republicans are trying to shut our doors and keep a lot of Latinos out.
Now, Republicans do say, Mark, when it came to the Hispanic vote, it was not so long ago, it was almost a 50-50 split. I think George W. Bush still got about 44% of the Hispanic vote. That's now down to 27% under Mitt Romney. Is that about policies? Is that about, as you say, where those Hispanics are from? Is it from Cuba, or is it from Venezuela or Colombia? I mean, what are the factors, and what will the Republican Party do to make sure they don't become a permanent minority party within maybe a decade?
I actually think it is about policy. George W. Bush did reach out to Latinos. In fact, we Democrats call them Latinos because that's how they like to be called. Republicans tend to call them Hispanics, which is perhaps the Anglicization of it. I guess it tells you one difference between Republicans and Democrats is we at least know what they like to call themselves. But, no, it was a big difference in policy. George W. Bush reached out to the Latino vote. He supported things like the DREAM Act. He supported things like immigration reform. In fact, many Republicans used to support immigration reform, and then Barack Obama became president. He put it on the table, and many, many Republicans, including John McCain and others, switched sides immediately. They didn't want to support something that Barack Obama had supported. In doing so, they managed to alienate the Latino population. I don't think it's a coincidence that they dropped from 44% to 27%. The demographics are not so much pro-democratic as pro-Latino. The Latino vote is growing. There are more and more Latinos. It's the fastest growing minority in America, even larger than the African-American population, which is our traditional largest minority. Now the Latinos are our largest minority. And I think Republicans are recognizing they cannot write off this population anymore. I suspect they'll switch back to the more pro-immigration philosophy they had under George W. Bush, and we're actually going to pass some good pro-Latino, pro-immigration legislation in the next 2 years. It's one of the few things I'm fairly confident about in what's going to be a gridlock between the Congress and the president.
So immigration reform, because of the need of both sides to woo the Latino vote, is likely to progress in the second term in a way it really didn't in the first.
I believe so. I really do. I think the Republicans have learned from their mistake. We'll see. If they haven't learned, we'll win an even bigger electoral victory in 2014 and 2016. But I think they learned from their mistake, and immigration reform will progress in the next 2 years.
This is, Mark, being described by some as a status quo election. Obama's back. The House is still in Republican hands. The Senate's still with a Democratic majority, but not the kind of supermajority they need to do whatever they wanted to do, which they had for a couple of years early on there in Obama's first term. Is this status quo, or has there been a shift in power one way or the other? Obama's back, but he's going to be a lame duck pretty quickly. How is this going to play out in the next few months as this fiscal cliff looms, but into next year as well?
Well, you're right that Republicans are calling it a status quo election because they don't want to admit that they lost. They did lose. Not only did President Obama win re-election when many Republicans thought he would not, but we won two seats in the Senate. That's even more than I predicted, and I'm a good optimistic Democrat. We had two-thirds of the seats, 23 out of 33 seats that were up in the Senate were Democratic seats we had to defend. The Republicans only had to defend 10, and we took two from them. That's a dramatic victory. Many people thought the Republicans would take over the Senate. In the House, we gained seats as well. I think they're still counting some votes, but at the end of the day, we'll end up with a net of 5 to 10 seats. You're right that it's not enough to take over the House of Representatives, but it is a gain nonetheless. And frankly, the only reason we haven't taken over the House of Representatives is because of, it's a very complex thing called gerrymandering. Basically, state legislatures draw the lines every 10 years when we have a census. That's according to the Constitution. And because we lost, we Democrats lost big in 2010, Republicans gained a lot of state legislatures, and they drew lines. I think you'll find the final vote will show that more Americans voted for Democrats than Republicans in the House of Representatives, if you add up all the votes. But because of the way the lines were drawn, they maintained the House. I don't think it's a victory to say that more Americans voted for the president, for Democrats in the Senate, and more and Democrats in the House, but because of some technicalities, they get to maintain the House. I think Republicans have got to compromise more, no longer be the party of no. And as you point out, the fiscal cliff, that's the ultimate question. I mean, whether or not Republicans will finally compromise. I think they will. I think they're going to agree on some taxes that will be increased for millionaires. That's something that the vast majority of Americans support. It's something even the majority of millionaires support. And Republicans, I don't think they can stand by that position anymore. Now, we'll see. It'll go down to the wire. There are Republicans arguing they shouldn't compromise, but if they don't, we're going to do even better in 2014.
Finally, Mark, what about President Obama? What do you think is going to be on his bucket list at about this time? The second terms of that, they're not necessarily that kind to re-elected American presidents. They start to think of their legacy and what they want to do while they still have the chance. What do you think Obama wants to do with this next 4 years, or how many of those years he can get things done effectively?
Well, let's start with the first month. He's got to do something about the fiscal cliff in the first month. He's running out of time on that one. By Christmas Day, they will either reach a grand bargain or this country is going to be very, very angry. I think they will reach a deal, and I think that will come before Christmas. Following that, like I said, immigration reform will happen. I also think he's going to consolidate Obamacare. Republicans tried every way to destroy President Obama's health care reform measure, but he won it through the legislature, he won it through the courts, and now that he's going to be president for four more years, that will be consolidated. A lot of his second term will be consolidating his victories in the first term. Financial reform, the Dodd-Frank Act, that's another thing that needs very strong regulations to prevent Wall Street from being too big to fail, to prevent Wall Street from making the kinds of gambling bets that end up making profits for Wall Street when they succeed, and a lot of costs to the taxpayers when they fail. So he'll be consolidating financial reform, consolidating health reform. I think we will see more gay rights. It'll be an interesting measure to see whether same-sex marriage will be upheld, not just in the nine states where it now exists in D.C., but across the country. I also think Barack Obama will be doing more in infrastructure and jobs, things that the Republicans fought him on in the first few years, but I don't think they'll have much of an agenda to do that this time. The most controversial things he will do will be some kind of entitlement reform. We Democrats will not be too pleased if he cuts back on Social Security and Medicare. He better tread lightly there or he's going to lose a lot of power on the left. It'll be interesting for me to see also in foreign policy to see if he takes a stronger stand in Syria. I'd like him to take a stronger stand there. I'm very concerned about the people dying there. But I should be clear, that's not a popular position in the United States. That's my personal position. Most Americans, I think, would rather us just take all the troops home and focus on needs here.
So there's a bit to do there. That's quite a shopping list. We'll, I guess, have to just watch over the next 4 years to see how many he ticks off. Great to talk to you again, Mark. Thank you very much for being with us this week.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now to former Chief Administrative Officer of the U.S. House of Representatives and Newt Gingrich staffer, Scott Faulkner. Scott, welcome back to the program.
Pleasure as always.
First, can we get your reaction to the results this week? After all that, it seemed 18 months of campaigning. And aren't we just pretty much where we started? Barack Obama in the White House, Republicans in the House, and Democrats in the Senate.
Actually, in some ways, we're worse off because a number of moderates in both parties either retired or were defeated. And so we end up with probably a bigger gap in a deepening trench warfare than we started before Election Day.
If the composition of the new Congress is going to be no more accommodating to the president, what about his ability with a new mandate, perhaps a bigger victory than a lot of us expected, 332 Electoral College votes to 206 on paper at least? That looks like a very substantial win. Does it carry some political heft as well on Capitol Hill?
I would say not. Unfortunately, everyone is already gearing up for 2014, and the Republicans think they're going to retake the Senate then. And the Boehner and Cantor and the other House leaders are sitting there saying, you know, they're kind of like the Spartans at the gate, at Thermopylae there, saying we're going to hold back the hordes, and so it's our role to to basically stem the tide of the election.
Now, this is, even though I guess guys like you and I enjoy the colour and movement of campaigns in the United States, at some point in a four-year election cycle, or the two-year cycle for the House and a third of the Senate, at some point you've got to get down and govern and get things done. Why has this just become a sort of a perpetual partisan battle rather than about doing things in Washington?
Well, it doesn't seem like anyone is bothered by the fact that Congress is only supported by about 9% of the American public. Everyone else thinks they're a bunch of idiots and that they're really in desperate need of adult supervision. And because they look at their base, they look at their fundraising cycle, and they look at the media that is they kind of cherry pick. If you're a conservative, you look at Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and talk radio. If you're a liberal, you look at MSNBC and some of those pundits. And so there's absolutely no reality check because you get to pick your reality.
But here's what I don't get, Scott. With that 9% approval rating of Congress, they just about all of them got back. So what's the disconnect here?
Well, one of them is redistricting, that every 10 years, America reapportions congressional districts and redraws the lines, and it's always redrawn for incumbents. And the in the case of the Republicans, because in 2010 they took over so many governorships and so many state legislatures, they had the vast majority of control state by state for how the lines got redrawn. So they clearly redrew them for themselves. Again, it goes both ways. Democrats had their opportunities in previous cycles. And I mean, my favorite was there was a California district drawn in 1981 that was only contiguous at low tide. So it's so they, you know, both sides are more than willing to protect their incumbents. And so the problem is, the moment you protect an incumbent, you also are insulating an incumbent. And that reality check, again, is just somewhere in the future.
So not particularly cheerful news then on the hope of the better functioning of government. But what about some of the other lessons to come out of this campaign? It seems that despite the literally tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars spent by some individuals, the Koch brothers, Sheldon Adelson, the casino billionaire, etc., that at the end of the day, it didn't seem to have that much of an impact, did it?
No, except that there were far less people voting. I mean, I think in many ways it was a turnoff. If you look at the total turnout for this election versus 4 years ago, and you had the enthusiasm factor for Obama 4 years ago, but even but the Republican fall off, I think it was like a 10 million fall off for Obama and a 3 million to 4 million fall off for the Republicans. So I think a lot of this overspending and saturation between robocalls and direct mail and the wall-to-wall ads on TV that were overwhelmingly negative in all cases, I think a lot of people just tuned it out and didn't vote.
The verdict of the American people, pretty clear, although sort of in raw numbers, it was still a relatively close election, which is what we were expecting. The Electoral College makes it look like a bigger win for Obama. But what are the lessons, do you think, for the Republican side out of all of this? Some were immediately saying, look, the problem is we nominated a moderate. We should have gone for a much more conservative candidate. Others say, no, look, the problem is the party's become too conservative and we can no longer appeal to the middle ground to minorities and to female voters. What's your read on all that?
Well, I think first of all, you ended up with those issues like the with Murdoch in Indiana and Aiken earlier in Missouri, where you had Republicans who are so theocratic in their approach. I mean, that's really not Republicanism. That's not conservatism. That is basically 10th century theocracy, and that poisoned a lot of momentum because Indiana should have been a clear Republican retention, and Missouri should have been a Republican pickup. And in both cases, these Republican challengers came forward with these very, very bizarre, anti-scientific, anti-women, totally theocratic approaches to the abortion pro-life issues, and it just blew them both out of the water. You had time and time again weak Senate candidates in other places who are also doing missteps. And I think, to your point, Republicans need to understand that we're in the 21st century, not the 10th century, and that Republicanism, conservatism, the issue of free enterprise, the issue of limited but accountable government can resonate with various minorities and new immigrants. I mean, one of the sad moments was in 1980 when Jack Kemp could have been on the ticket with Ronald Reagan, because Kemp was one of the main advocates and thought leaders in the conservative movement in the 70s and into the early 80s, talking about how do you take the message, how do you apply conservative Republican principles to the inner city, to minorities, to poverty-level people, and make them understand and show them how these concepts can help them build small businesses, rise out of poverty. Because he was not put on the ticket and you ended up with the Bush dynasty, you ended up going down a spur line that is now taking us over a cliff. You basically have conservative Republicanism being viewed as a bunch of angry white guys and old white guys, and instead of a more diverse party. Now, we have a new generation coming up, everyone from Jindal and Cruz, who just got elected in Texas. And you have a number of outstanding minority faces who are outstanding leaders in their own right. Whether they were any race, they would still be viewed as top thinkers and leaders. And maybe as we move to 2014, but more importantly 2016, you're going to see some of them come forward, and the face of the Republican Party will change, and hopefully the ideology or the perceived ideology of the Republican Party will change. But there's a long way between now and then.
For, I guess, only the last 6 months, Mitt Romney has been effectively the leader of the Republican Party. He's now on that peculiar political scrap heap alongside the likes of Bob Dole and Mike Dukakis. The answer to a pub trivia question in future years, perhaps. Who's now in charge of the Republican Party? Who will be making the calls as to whether they come to some kind of a grand bargain with Obama and the Democrats in Congress over the fiscal cliff and all the other quite pressing issues?
Well, it'll be the congressional leaders. And so you've got Boehner and Cantor in the House, and you've got McConnell in the Senate, and they're a mixed bag. And so the question is are they going to deepen the trenches for the trench warfare, or are they going to say, we need to govern in some way to show that there's an alternative to Obama and the Democrats? And it isn't, and leading and governing is not just about shooting the other party down, but proposing something that has an actual chance of getting into law and into reality. And unfortunately, I think they all still want to do the sound bites to their base, and it'll be interesting to see if anyone will step forward and do more than that, especially now that you have a number of moderate senators, Olympia Snow in Maine, Brown in Massachusetts, Lugar in Indiana, who are no longer going to be part of the mix.
Well, Scott Faulkner, it's great to talk to you, even if I'm left with a bit of a sense of here we go again. Maybe we haven't achieved that much in the last 18 months after all.
Think of a slinky on an escalator.
I will think about that. Thanks for joining us at Inside America.
Thank you. Pleasure as always.
And that is all for this edition of Inside America for this week, US Presidential Election Week 2012, a special edition of Planet America coming up on your TV on ABC News 24 this afternoon at 4:15 Eastern Time. And if you missed my documentary, The Party of Reagan, last Sunday night on the telly, it's on ABC iView to watch any time that suits you now. And thanks for all the kind comments about that show. And thank you as well for tuning in for this edition of Inside America. I'm John Barron. See you again soon.
Thanks, but no thanks.
And the Chicago Eyes of 60.
Beyond the pre-dawn darkness, better days lie ahead.